Chapter 30, About the Treasure Seeker's Plan and the Terrible Story of Sheng Ma. Evening was falling, and it was getting cool. Seven Stars had driven the camels and sheep nearer to the yurt, and the poodle had watched to see that none of them straggled back to the Dara Sen pastures. Naidong himself looked after the horses, for that was a man's job. As the sun sank behind the trees, the poodle came running up to Seven Stars, barking. "He's marvelously intelligent," said Seven Stars. "He's telling me to tie up the camels and see to the sheep for the night."
"What's his name?" asked Christian.
"Just Dog," said Seven Stars. "Mongolian dogs have no name of their own," and she ran after the poodle. Christian and Big Tiger went with her. As they already knew how to tie up camels, they helped her to round them up one after the other and fasten them to the line. They undid the nose cord, which was hanging around their necks, and led them up to the line which Naidong stretched between two poles, every evening at a different spot. "Zook, zook!" cried Seven Stars. "Zook, zook!" cried Christian and Big Tiger, too. Thereupon the camels knelt down, and Seven Stars counted them. When they got back to the yurt, Good Fortune said he would like to roast the pheasant, but did not know how, as Naidong had no pan, since Mongols eat only boiled meat. If there was no objection, he would use the flat tea kettle as a pan. Then they sat down in front of the yurt, waiting for Naidong, who was still tying the horses. Christian wanted to go and help him and get better acquainted with the piebald, but at that moment a flock of white swans flew with a swishing sound over the trees. Seven Stars, Christian, and Big Tiger raced down to the river just in time to see them alight on the water, not far from the ford. Having preened their feathers, they swam silently down the dark river. Suddenly they began to utter excited cries, bent back their necks, and expectantly swam around in a circle. Soon there was a swishing sound, and two small white objects dived into the water, came up again, and swam through the circle of swans as if they were the chief personages there. But they were only two little ducks. At sight of them, Seven Stars seemed overjoyed. She raised both thumbs, as Naidong had done in approval of Christian's horsemanship, and whispered delightedly, "Lam Shova! Lam Shova!" The ducks had the most magnificent plumage. Their breasts were golden, turning gradually to ivory, and their mane feathers were pure white. Their wings were a light turquoise like the evening sky. The drake had two golden shields on its head, and over them a tuft of dark feathers which hung down behind. It stretched out its red beak and began swimming upstream. The duck followed, and after them the swans swam in a straight line like obedient subjects. The procession disappeared under the dark foliage of overhanging branches. The water became still, green, and dark again, and if an occasional twig had not sailed past, one would have imagined the Naringal to be a pond rather than a river. Good Fortune, who had joined them unobserved, was just as childishly overjoyed as Seven Stars at the mere sight of the ducks. "These ducks are called llama birds," he explained, "because, like the holy llamas, they point the way to peace and happiness. Other birds like to follow them, and they thrive in their blessed company." "Those two llama birds have not been long here," said Seven Stars. "We don't see them often, but I know they will nest on the little island a bit farther down the river. They will be safe there from the fox, which doesn't like the water, and the swans are wise and stay near them until they fly north." Good Fortune confirmed what Seven Stars said and added that it was a very lucky omen to catch a glimpse of llama birds. "You'll see," he said in a low voice to Christian and Big Tiger. "We'll find the silver that lies hidden in the Black City."
"But it belongs to Naidong," said Big Tiger.
"He'll give us some of it if we do the digging for him," asserted Good Fortune.
"I don't see any reason for that," Big Tiger dissented.
"Neither do I, really," Good Fortune admitted, and he stayed behind while Seven Stars returned to the yurt.
"But it is so, nevertheless. When I first got to know Mongols, I thought they were like children and not sensible people at all, because they gave me food and wanted nothing in return, and I was a stranger to them, moreover, and no one knew me."
"That is what is called hospitality," said Christian. "Hospitality is a beautiful thing, but otherwise nothing special."
"But they themselves were not rich," said Good Fortune thoughtfully, "and gradually I learned that they are all like that. They are a strange people, quite different from us Chinese, and they give things away, expecting no return beyond a haddock at most. Then, said Big Tiger pensively, they are better people than we are. Whether better or not, replied Good Fortune, shrugging his shoulders, they are simply different. When they make a bargain, they haggle just as we do, and there are lots of redbeards among them, too. I have heard, said Big Tiger, that there's nothing dishonorable in being a redbeard. Do you think that? Asked Good Fortune, giving Big Tiger a searching look. I think so, and Compass Mountain thinks the same. They say that being a redbeard is no disgrace as long as one is not found out, Christian agreed. That's just it, said Good Fortune, and he tramped back to the yurt, lost in thought. Not to be found out, that's just it. Seven Stars sat in front of the yurt, scrubbing the tea kettle with sand. Father says you want to roast and eat the bird, she asked. Now that it's dead, it must be eaten, said Good Fortune. Seven Stars shuddered at the thought, but went on bravely scrubbing. When the kettle was clean, Good Fortune and Big Tiger went into the yurt and began roasting the pheasant in mutton fat, while Christian remained outside with Seven Stars. Soon the entrancing odor of roast fowl pervaded the air. At long last, Good Fortune called out that dinner was ready. Seven Stars took Christian's hand, and together they entered the yurt, where they found Good Fortune already carving up the bird. Despite every persuasion, Nidong refused to taste a bite of it, and Seven Stars held her hands before her face. The poodle stuck his big head expectantly into the tent, but was shooed out. "Why may he not come in?" asked Christian. "A dog may not enter a tent," Good Fortune explained, "for the tent is only for human beings. Besides, he must keep watch outside, and how could he do that if he were pampered and allowed to lie about inside?" Nidong nodded agreement. Then he watched attentively while his guests ate up the pheasant. Seven Stars collected the bones and brought them out to the poodle. "I haven't had such a feast for many a long day," said Affliction. "I shall not be surprised if another misfortune happens." But nothing happened. Nidong and Seven Stars drank milk and ate some cheese, and Christian wished he had some honey cakes to give them. Good Fortune tried to lead the conversation back to the Black City, but gave up when he found that Nidong would not speak of it. Then Nidong distributed blankets and furs for the night, checked the flue, and shut the yurt door. "May you sleep well," he said, when they were all lying in their places. "It is not yet time to sleep," objected Seven Stars. "I beg pardon for my ill-behaved child," said Nidong. "I am indeed very guilty for having brought up Seven Stars so badly. Please forgive me for it." "That is far from true," cried Good Fortune. "I confess that we have most regrettably neglected our first duty as guests. But tomorrow, Big Tiger will make amends for us. He knows many stories worthy of being told in every tent." "I look forward to your stories," said Seven Stars to Big Tiger. But Big Tiger assured her that he was only a silly dunce. All disagreed vigorously. Finally, Big Tiger gave in. "I'll think over what's worth telling," he promised. Silence then fell on the tent. Christian lay beside Big Tiger, and they were both thinking hard.
"I know how it must be done," whispered Big Tiger.
"How what must be done?" asked Christian, surprised.
"How the silver must be got from the Black City," exclaimed Big Tiger under his breath.
And then he described in detail the plan which he had figured out, and asked Christian whether he thought it good.
"I couldn't think of a better one," said Christian admiringly. "We'll dig by ourselves. Do you agree?" asked Big Tiger.
"If you could manage it," Christian admitted, "it would be splendid. Just leave it to me. Good night, Kui-chan." "Good night, Big Tiger." And then Big Tiger whispered into Christian's ear, "Nidong is as wise as the Yellow Emperor and as firm as a rock. Now I know why his name is spoken with respect in 1,000 tents.
"Why?" Christian wanted to know.
"I'll tell you when we're quite alone," whispered Big Tiger. It was a glorious night. 1,000 times 1,000 stars passed over the desert and over the Narangal. They were reflected in the water and flooded the ruins of the tragic city of Etzina with a bluish light. The moon moved with them, and when it shone through the chimney hole of Nidong's tent,
Christian woke up. To open one's eyes and look up at the drifting moon makes one feel sad without any reason. But Christian's sadness had a reason, for he was thinking of his home in Peking and imagining how everything was there. He saw his father pacing restlessly up and down on the porch, and his mother bending over his little sister's cot to hide her tears. And hidden away in some corner was the old ama who was being blamed, either with words or with looks, for his disappearance. His greatest fear was for her, for he was more at home in Chinese than in Western ways, and he knew what terrible things could happen. Indeed, if Big Tiger had not been sleeping so soundly, he would have wakened him up merely to say, "I'm thinking of my ama," and Big Tiger would have understood. For often faithful servants who had been unjustly blamed took their lives on the thresholds of their employers' doors and were found lying there the next morning. And the neighbors and passers-by said, "It can't be helped. That family has committed a great sin and has lost face. For all over the world, it is the dead who are in the right." Morning came, bringing much bustle, which was just what good fortune liked. First, he sternly forbade Nai Dong to do any work, and then Nai Dong forbade him to as much as lift a finger, and so they became fast friends. "Don't you know," said Nai Dong indignantly, "that the Mongol Joss bids us honor and serve our guests?" "Please refrain from honoring miserable people of low origin," said Good Fortune. "You are my guests," insisted Nai Dong. "More than that, I do not know or wish to know." Then Good Fortune tried pleading, and when he swore that nothing gave him greater joy than cooking, Nai Dong gave in at last. He went to take the horses out to pasture, while Good Fortune looked after the household. Before sunrise, Seven Stars had gone with the camels and sheep to the Darasen pastures. The few chores were soon done. Big Tiger and Christian shook and folded the blankets. Affliction tidied away the cushions. Good Fortune lit the fire. Then they had tea and millet. Seven Stars came riding back from the pastures on a camel, and when they were all sitting down together, Nai Dong said, "I have decided to ride to the Black City with Good Fortune. What do you say to that?" "Don't do it, father," cried Seven Stars. "Anyone who takes anything from the Black City dies." "I will take nothing," replied Nai Dong, "so I won't die. But I would like to do my guests a service, if 10 bars of silver do not seem to mean a thing to them." "Never could we accept such a gift," protested Good Fortune. "The silver is your property, for you are the finder." "For that very reason," asserted Nai Dong, "I can do what I please with my property. You have suffered a great loss. Permit me to give you a trifle instead." He drew a haddock from his belt, and kneeling, offered it to Good Fortune. "Do not disdain my poor gift," he pleaded, "for yourself and for your friends. True, I am worried about how it will begin and how it will end, for you may also be endangered. But I have thought out everything, and there are ways and means," he added slyly, "which we shall discuss later." Good Fortune hesitated. Dearly though he would have loved to have the silver from the Black City, the death of Nowhere at All intimidated him, and Seven Stars' fears made him uneasy too. "This is an uncanny business," he admitted. "Hamaga," cried Nai Dong, "haven't you heard? No evil thought rests on the treasure of Etsina." "You need not fear," Affliction suddenly made himself heard. "You may accept the gift without hesitation, for surely somebody was there already." "If it should turn out that way," said Nai Dong calmly, "then you must accept 4 of my camels. Why should I have many camels when you have none and need some?" "Your goodness is without end or measure," said Good Fortune, and bowing profoundly, he accepted the haddock. Then he drew another one from his belt and offered it to Nai Dong. "We shall set out tomorrow morning," said Nai Dong, and thanked him for the return gift. "Bolna," answered Good Fortune resolutely. "But if you have no one with you," Big Tiger broke in, "you may be attacked." "What do you mean?" asked Good Fortune. "I am thinking of the 4 high walls of the city," Big Tiger explained. "If someone is digging inside a city, he cannot see what is going on outside. People might come the way and say, 'Let us look at the Black City,' and then they would enter the gateway and see our respected elder lifting the silver bars out of the hole, and that would be bad." "Hmm," muttered Good Fortune,
We certainly don't want people walking around Karakoto while we're there.
There are many things to be thought of, Christian interjected. Big Tiger has a plan. It might be well to say, speak, that we may know it.
Bolna, cried Naidong, let Big Tiger speak.
If I don't have to be there, said Affliction, it will certainly be a splendid plan.
It can't be done without Affliction, Big Tiger objected, and Seven Stars must help with it too.
Oh, woe, cried Seven Stars, I would be no good for that.
I see already, said Affliction, that it is not a good plan.
Be quiet, ordered Naidong. Let us hear what it is.
I find that with Seven Stars we are six, said Big Tiger, and that is exactly the necessary number for the undertaking. For Karakota has four walls, one in each direction. That is in the account which we heard.
That is so, affirmed Naidong.
If we have a sentry posted on each wall, continued Big Tiger, then we are safe from all sides. If someone comes on foot, he can be seen from a long way off. A rider can be seen still sooner, and a caravan is heard long before it is seen. Someone need only call hello, and the two who are digging cover up the hole with the stone slab turned upside down. Then nobody can read, the great treasure is near. And if people ask any questions, we can say, we're resting for a bit, because there were ghosts here just now who frightened us, but our faintness will pass off.
Great praise is due to you, Big Tiger, cried Naidong, and we shall follow your plan.
But who shall keep guard and who shall dig? Asked Good Fortune.
Our respected elder is right, said Big Tiger. It must be decided in advance what we are to do. Since the Black City is such a terrifying place, it is best if Compass Mountain and I do the digging. We both come from a long way off, and therefore the spirits, if there are any there, do not know us, and before they get to know us, we will pack up the silver and be gone.
You have courage, said Naidong, but will you still have it when you stand among the ruins?
We hope we shall endure the sight, said Christian.
Agreed, cried Good Fortune, but let us hear again how we are to find the stone and the silver.
Thereupon Naidong put on his cap, took down the book from the chest, and read out Prince Araptan's description, until he came to the place where he said, provide yourself with tools, ropes, and small baskets.
We do not need those, he said, closing the book.
Now we shall burn these written words, as is the custom.
I would not do that, objected Good Fortune. The holy men of the old times set down words so that they should last. Why will you go against their command?
It might happen, said Naidong, that a word would take wing, and nothing could ever bring it back again. It is better to destroy all. He took the book, loosened the binding threads, and threw the pages, one after another, into the fire. They blazed up, then crinkled and turned black. The writing still stood out in white and gray until Seven Stars took tongs and beat down the fluttering black pages as if they were enemies.
Now you can do nobody any harm, she cried with relief.
Then she went out, lightheartedly, and immediately afterwards could be heard trotting away on her camel.
I must go too, said Naidong. I shall be back in the evening.
Where are you going? Asked Good Fortune.
Ride with me, Naidong invited him. We have a lot of work to do.
But who will do the cooking? Asked Good Fortune.
I shall do it, Big Tiger offered. Our elder need not worry.
As Naidong and Good Fortune rode away, Christian and Big Tiger cried,
Yabona! Say Yabona!
They would have liked to know what Naidong was up to, but neither dared to ask.
Perhaps Seven Stars knows, said Christian.
We'll ask her, Big Tiger decided. Seven Stars was sitting, as the day before, by the side of the caravan track, with the black poodle beside her.
We met a man named Thunderbolt, said Christian casually.
He had a gun. Perhaps you know him?
Yes, I know him, replied Seven Stars. He's a llama.
Do llamas also carry guns?
Usually they don't. But sometimes they have one, she said.
I thought, began Christian again, that llamas stayed in monasteries and prayed.
Not all of them, Seven Stars informed him. Some leave the monastery, but they still remain llamas. Perhaps they haven't learned to read well, or they were not obedient, or perhaps they wanted to live in a tent again, and in the saddle, above all in the saddle, for that's where we Mongols are at home. And what about the venerable chief? Christian asked straight out. What do you know about him? Cried Seven Stars. I've heard that he's a robber, and that he's got a strong castle made all of stone somewhere in the middle of the desert.
He's a prince, said Seven Stars softly, and a great warrior. It is said, too, that he is a llama, but whether he has a gun or not, I do not know.
He must have one, Christian surmised, for he has enemies. We hear there's a certain Shong Ma whom the venerable chief hates very much, said Big Tiger courageously. Shong Ma is a devil, cried Seven Stars in a horrified tone. People have spoken of him as if he were a human being, said Big Tiger, for there are certain men looking for him, for instance, the llama Thunderbolt. I hope he'll find him, cried Seven Stars, her eyes blazing angrily. Unfortunately, it's not known for certain if he's alive. For a long time he was said to be dead, and now there's a rumor going around that he's still alive and hiding under another name.
Do people know the other name? Asked Christian.
No, they don't, said Seven Stars. But the sharp eyes of the venerable chief are searching everywhere, and they'll find Shong Ma if he's alive.
What has he done? Christian asked her.
I'll tell you, and when I've told it, you'll be frightened.
Of whom? Asked Big Tiger.
Of Shong Ma, of course, cried Seven Stars. You should count yourselves lucky that you only hear about such monsters and don't meet them.
You never know, said Christian thoughtfully. You may go for a walk and sit on the edge of a washtub because you're tired and want to watch the pigeons, and suddenly you're scared because someone is standing behind you with eyes like a wolf, and he spits into the washtub and his black beard trembles.
That's not he, said Seven Stars. Shong Ma has no beard, and he looks like an ordinary man. That's why it's so hard to find him.
Big Tiger signed to Christian to keep quiet.
Go on, tell us about Shong Ma, he said.
He's from the Sinning Fu district, began Seven Stars. But what can you do with a man who lives like a great gentleman and runs up big debts, which he cannot pay on New Year's Day?
You can put him in jail, said Christian.
Shong Ma couldn't be put in jail, continued Seven Stars. He fled through the Three Kingdoms as far as Manchuria. There he began trading with the Chinese settlers at the other side of the Tsingan Mountains and with the impoverished Chachar and Naiman Mongol tribes. But he also found a prince who had great riches in cattle and old family treasures. When the prince rode to Urga with his men 20 years ago for the Kurlatai, there is a note that says the Kurlatai is an assembly of Mongol princes. This Shong Ma gathered a gang of ruffians. They attacked the prince's yurts, stole the cattle, and carried away the contents of the chests from the tents. And they murdered all the women and children.
What are you saying? Cried Christian. Why are you so shocked? Asked Seven Stars. Didn't I tell you he's a devil?
Compass Mountain never knew until now, said Big Tiger calmly, that there are men more wicked than wolves or tigers.
Since the attack on the prince, continued Seven Stars, Shong Ma has remained invisible. There was a rumor that he had been seen in Lan Chao, but that's a long time ago. The prince forsook the pastures of his ancestors and swore to kill every Chinaman whom he would meet in the steppes. 20 men of his tribe swore that oath with him, and many joined him when he began his campaign of vengeance.
Did he do what he intended? Asked Christian, horrified.
He did what he had to do, declared Seven Stars, for an oath cannot be broken. He conquered villages and whole towns, and not a single Chinese person was left alive in them. When he had spilled enough blood, he released his men from the oath and built himself a castle in the middle of the desert. Now he is looking only for Shong Ma. His men are on the road at all times, especially in Sinning Fu and Lan Chao. His spies sit at the campfires of the caravans, listening, in the hope of hearing something. When Thunderbolt was with us 20 days ago, he was in a particular hurry. The prince, he said, had got news that a man named Moonlight, whom they had mourned as dead, was living at the court of the Sunit Wang.
Many people call Moonlight Little Paw, said Big Tiger.
How do you know that? Asked Seven Stars, astounded.
We hunted the wolf with him, reported Christian, and that's how we became friends.
"I am glad," cried Seven Stars, "for we shall see moonlight soon again."
"Do you know," asked Big Tiger, "why the Llama Thunderbolt went to fetch moonlight in such haste?"
"He didn't tell us," said Seven Stars, "but it must be on some important matter, for moonlight sits at the prince's left hand, and he's always the first in the saddle for important undertakings."
Big Tiger meditatively turned the ring on his thumb.
"So the prince is the venerable chief, and the venerable chief is Dompignac, and Dompignac is..."
"Don't say he's a robber," cried Seven Stars. "He's a noble man. Many fear him, but there are also many who love him."
"Nobody who kills the innocent is a noble person," said Big Tiger. "We came across the holy abbot Yolros Lama, whom Dompignac met many years ago. The abbot said to Dompignac, 'You darken the light. No noble man lives thus.' And Dompignac threw himself on the ground and wept."
"He didn't do that," cried Seven Stars excitedly.
"The holy man, Yolros Lama," replied Big Tiger firmly, "told us so himself, and Yolros Lama speaks no lie. Remember, he's a living Buddha."
"But," said Seven Stars, speaking with deep emotion, "how else is a person to live who has suffered such a calamity?"
"Perhaps," said Big Tiger, "Dompignac is a man who considers it right to be stubborn and is proud of it. But he shouldn't be. My grandfather says, 'A noble person sees the good and imitates it. If he has faults, he gives them up.'"
"Is your grandfather a learned man?"
"No, he's not a learned man. He's only my grandfather."
"And what do you think?" Seven Stars said, turning to Christian.
"I think," said Christian, "that Big Tiger's grandfather is right." Then Seven Stars became silent, knit her brows, and looked straight out at the caravan road, on which the wheel marks of the truck could be seen. She was drawing figures with a reed in the sand, and blotting them out again with an air of reluctance. Christian's heart grew heavy. For the first time he had an inkling of the dark powers which make people insensitive to the sufferings of others. Big Tiger had stopped twisting the ring. He was looking thoughtfully at the silver snake, and did not raise his eyes until the poodle began sniffing and pricking up his ears.
"Sit still," Seven Stars commanded in a low voice, "and you too also, please keep quiet. If you wait a bit, my antelopes will come."
"Do they belong to you?" asked Christian. Seven Stars had to laugh, although she was sad. "They only belong to themselves," she said, "but all the same, they're mine." The poodle grew restless. He wanted to dash off, but Seven Stars held him firmly by the collar.
"He will never understand that he's not to chase them. He's frightened away all our hares, and they never came back. It's sad."
"Did you have hares, too?" asked Big Tiger.
"Yes, we had lots of hares," said Seven Stars. "They lived quite near our yurt, and when foxes or strange dogs hunted them, they came running to us for protection. I used to stroke their long ears and their necks and feel their hearts beating, and they wouldn't go out until I looked round and told them the way was clear."
"With us, hares run away as soon as they see people," said Big Tiger.
"Hush," said Seven Stars, and all three kept dead quiet, for the curved antlers of an antelope buck had appeared above the high Darasen grass as the animal gazed over cautiously. In their joy and excitement, Christian and Big Tiger forgot Xiong Ma and the venerable chief. They thought they had never seen anything more beautiful than the proud and graceful animal with its trusting brown eyes. The buck came slowly nearer, then stood carefully observing the poodle, while the does, unperturbed, dispersed over the pasture, nibbling at the leaves and gazing without fear at the group by the wayside. Gradually they moved off and mixed with the sheep and the camels, whom they seemed to have long known as good friends.
"They know we don't harm them," said Seven Stars.
"They walk as if they were stepping on air," said Big Tiger. "That's what makes them so beautiful."
"Don't you hunt antelopes here?" asked Christian.
"Yes, we hunt them," Seven Stars admitted, "but only if meat is scarce."
"And the hares?" asked Big Tiger.
Seven Stars was horrified. "One mustn't hunt the hare," she said. "He's such a small animal. And besides, there's a hare in the moon. What would he think?"
"Excuse me," said Big Tiger. "I had forgotten the hare in the moon." "He was in great danger last year," said Seven Stars.
"How was that?" asked Christian.
"The moon was round and beautiful," recounted Seven Stars. "We were already asleep when suddenly the camels got restless. They jumped up and the dog whimpered as if in pain. That woke me up. I roused my father and mother and my brothers and we went out. We got a terrible fright. The beautiful moon had turned blood red and half of it was no longer there. Hurry," cried father. "The hungry wolves of the heavens want to eat the hare in the moon. We must drive them off." So we snatched anything that was to hand and father got his gun and fired several shots. We all shouted and made a lot of noise and in the end it helped. The moon became bright again. The wolves had to let go their prey, and the hare sat on its haunches as before and looked down at the world. We were all very glad.
"That's called an eclipse of the moon," said Christian. "I learned at school what causes it, but I've forgotten."
"You should have been more attentive," said Seven Stars reproachfully.
By this time, it was midday, and the sun was at its hottest. The poodle ran down to the river for a drink, and Seven Stars went out to the Darasen pasture and came back with three camels. "We must water the animals," she said, giving Christian and Big Tiger each a leading cord. "Jur!" they cried, and led the camels behind them.
"Stop! That's not the way to do it," said Seven Stars. "People were not made to go on foot through the world. They have two legs, so they can ride."
"But it's only a short way to the river," Big Tiger objected.
"We Mongols think," Seven Stars held forth, "that people should ride whether the journey is long or short.
Bolvo?"
"Bolna," said Christian.
"But the camels have no saddles," said Big Tiger. "How are we to ride them?"
"I'll show you how," said Seven Stars, calling Zook, Zook.
The camels plopped down obediently on their knees and slid forward until their hind legs dropped and the heavy body sank. Then they tucked in their hind legs and looked wonderingly around to see what was coming.
"You must jump onto their backs quickly," said Seven Stars, "because most camels stand up as soon as they notice you're going to ride them. We've no saddle or stirrups, but just watch me."
She drew up the nose cord lightly, gripped the animal's shoulder, and in spite of her heavy boots, swung with incredible agility onto the camel's back just as it stood up.
"Don't pull so hard," warned Seven Stars when she saw that Big Tiger had drawn his camel's nose cord taut. The camel stretched out its neck, roared angrily, and would have spat at Big Tiger if he hadn't loosened his hold. But mounting was not so difficult as it looked. Only one had to be quick, and once up, grip the animal hard with one's knees. Christian and Big Tiger were quick and nimble, and before one could count 1, 2, 3, they were perched up, proudly conscious that they had become camel riders.
"Drive the sheep together," ordered Seven Stars. "Each of you must ride out in a wide semicircle to see that no sheep remain behind. Meanwhile, I'll fetch the camels and wait for you."
Christian and Big Tiger shouted, "Bolna!" And then Big Tiger rode out through the Darasen pasture until it ceased and the horses' pasture began. Christian rode to the edge of the wood and plucked a good big branch with which to drive the sheep before him. The antelopes had long since disappeared. At first it seemed easy to round up the sheep, but some straggled, and while Christian rode after them, the whole flock had dispersed again in a trice. Seven Stars called the poodle, and once he arrived on the scene, the work went smoothly. He held the flock together, and Christian and Big Tiger only needed to round up the stragglers. When Christian caught up with Seven Stars, she handed him the ropes of the four camels, while she counted the sheep as they went down to the water. They wagged their thick tails and stirred up a great cloud of dust. Many were staggering under the weight of their enormous tails as they scrambled over the rough ground.
64, said Seven Stars. "That's right."
The riders dismounted at the riverbank. Seven Stars tied the camels' guide ropes around their necks, and they began to drink. One could see their bellies filling out and stretching. At intervals, they shook their upper lips, looked around them haughtily, and squirted water all over in sheer high spirits. The sheep drank much more politely, quickly left to make room for the camels, and went off to nibble at the bushes. They were left the whole afternoon on the pasture, which was usually reserved to the horses and the two cows.
"Don't forget, you have to tell us a story when Father comes back tonight," said Seven Stars.
"My knowledge is poor," replied Big Tiger.
"Where did your father go to?" asked Christian.
"He's gone to fetch my cousin Turakina," replied Seven Stars. "Someone must stay with the sheep when I go with you, but don't say anything to Turakina about Etsina and the silver."
"We are used to keeping silent," said Christian proudly.